Okay, and it looks like it's recording. Hello, everyone. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Josh.
And welcome to Room 396. Today we have a special guest on our show, on my show, Patricia Holgate Haney. She is a contributor to a book that's going to be coming out titled Love Meets Life: Stories of Love Showing Up in Unexpected Ways. Welcome, Patricia.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
I don't know how to call you. Like, should I call you Patricia or Pat or Patty? Or what do you like to go by?
You know, since you are very familiar, how about Pat or whatever you want? My dad says it's always good to call people anything but late to dinner.
And what's so special about this guest is Pat is Josh's mother. Right, Josh?
That's right. Very proud to have an author in the family, a published author.
Yes. So, Pat, how did you get involved with this book?
Well, I was very fortunate a few years ago, about four years ago, I met someone through a network of friends and different organizations, and there was a whole movement going about probably right after the election. Maybe it was really before the election in 2016. And I'd been familiar with her before that, but then I got more involved afterwards because we were all about a lot of the same things. Number one is, you know, equality. She is a big believer in equality. She works with a lot of different diverse groups, everything from religious to, you know, gay rights groups to you name it, anything that has to do with people being seen as equal, treated with respect, she's been very involved in. And she has a great backstory that you have to read in the book. But so Tara and I became involved, and really it was a lot through Facebook. And it's funny, the more we became involved, the more we saw that we were involved with the same people in other realms of our life. And she had a really great message that she started putting out there. And she started a company called Love Glasses Revolution. And the backstory of the company is basically, you can't see the haters with your love glasses on. And there's a really great dynamic story about it. She's brought that message to a lot of people that are really in need. And through her, I met a lot of people that were involved with not only underserved in the community, but mental health issues, people that were just trying to be kind in the world and make a difference that way. People that were focusing on being grateful for things instead of being angry about things that were happening. And I know that Josh can tell you that I was finding myself like so stressed out with all the things that were going on in the world, all the hate and the divisiveness out there, that I really basically just kind of tried to focus myself on things where I felt in one small way or another, I might be part of helping make a change for the better.
No, that's nice. Speaking of the main author of the book, what is her name?
It's Tara Ije. And she has a company, like I said, Love Glasses Revolution. She was an international published author in another compilation book. She has met everyone from political sides to when the El Paso shootings were on, you know, when those happened and that whole community was devastated. Tara and her husband got in their car, took love glasses and all types of things there and went there and just were with the people to show that other people cared. They connected with a school teacher there. They're still in communication with those people. There's so many things that she has done and been involved with. She's a very active with different groups during Pride activities. She's just a good-hearted person. She surrounds herself with those kind of people. So if you're in that loop, you're surrounded by those people, and you just keep engaging with people that you might not have ever met.
Yes.
That everybody's trying to make a positive change, and how that for all of our differences, we're all more connected and the same than anyone could think.
Oh yeah, that sounds exciting. Like, especially like when you surround, like you said, when you surround yourself with positive people, then like you kind of like you, it's contagious, right? So then you wanna spread it.
Right? Yeah, it is, and it's you know, it's part of the thing too is that, you know, you always feel, I shouldn't say you, I always felt that I had to have a lot of money or an inordinate amount of time or, you know, maybe a master's degree in something to ever make a difference. And I was kind of at a point where I was feeling like that I'm old, man. When am I going to do these things? And so one step at a time, one little bit at a time. And I found that I got back a lot more than I give, but I saw differences that were made. So it made me feel good.
So how long have you been writing, and like, what do you like to write about?
Well, you know, I started writing when I was a kid. There's a kind of a backstory on that. My initial writing was, I would copy things or write little stories and either staple when I had staplers or use yarn and make a little notebook. And I would peddle it to my poor unsuspecting neighbors when I was about 5 years old. And they would feel so bad and they'd give me a nickel or a dime for a book. But I loved to write. I loved it when my grandparents wrote to me. They lived overseas for a few years. And I loved reading the stories through writing and then writing back. I found it was a really good thing. I was never a diary person per se. You know, I didn't like Dear Diary. You know, I didn't get the dress I wanted. I was never like that. I was always about observations about things and then immediate feelings. So I kept journals on and off, through most of my, like teen life. And from really young age, I pretty much stopped when I was about 17 for a while. But, at one point, I was writing something I wish I still knew what it was, but I wrote something that I wrote it to a columnist in a local newspaper. Mm-hmm. And then they contacted my parents and said, hey, if she wants to come down here, we'd love to talk to her about it. So it was the San Gabriel Valley Tribune. And I don't remember the columnist's name, but he took time out of his day to have me come in there with my mom. And he talked to me about what it was I wanted to do. Did I want to write? Because he thought I had a good, you know, way to put my words down. They thought that I put it down well, especially for my age. And it made me feel good. It made me feel like, hey, there might be something I could do here. And so I kind of kept journals of things on and off about feelings. And then through a really bad circumstance, all of those things disappeared. And I used to draw back on them just to kind of read them and see what I was thinking at the time. But I always wanted to be a writer. My favorite classes in school were things that had to do where there was written assignments. So it didn't matter if it was fact, fiction, or, you know, life experience. I enjoyed that.
So when you were saying earlier about, like, you were creating like little stories and like selling them to people, mm-hmm. you were almost like mm-hmm. creating like fanzines?
Kind of. Like, you know, what like they were is I would write about like, maybe there was something happening. We lived in, at the time, as a rural area in Southern California. It's far from that now, but I would write about things like there was this hill called Cardboard Hill by our house that, you know, kids would go up there on literally on cardboard and slide down and pretty much almost kill themselves, and how that sometimes you would find like cow skulls out there because it used to be like, you know, kind of a dairy. And then before that, it was just regular, you know, like, urban type sprawl took over, and the little remnants of what the dairy farms were and stuff were there. And I would write a story about that. I would write a story about taking strawberries from my neighbor's yard. And then I got into biblical stuff, and I would write down versions of the Bible, like different verses. I was always really interested in it. I wasn't very religious per se, but I was curious. And there was a point in time that it got so much so that we had some neighbors across the street. Their names were Ted and Gloria Rowe, and they were evangelists that kind of used to travel around with the, you know, tents and things mm-hmm. and preach. And they asked my parents if I could go with them. So I don't know if it's to my fortune or not that they said no, but I just would go on things, and I loved the sound of it, and I loved the stories of it. But it was just something that I did, and it wasn't for any like I don't think it was for any real religious purpose. It was just that it, I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. Like my dad was really religious. So growing up, he was always talking like stuff about the Bible, doing verses from the Bible. And growing up, that was kind of a scary thing because it was just, everything was just about the Bible. And
we right.
went to Sunday school. But then once my parents divorced, it was just like that part just kind of went away. It's like, then it's just like, I'm not a religious person. And I don't think I was religious then as a kid when he was talking about churches and religion. But yeah, it's just kind of funny. Like when you brought that up, that it just reminded me of that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that when I was growing up, my dad's mother was pretty religious. And my dad was, he probably was one of the most well-versed, well-read persons that I've ever known. And he knew the Bible inside and out, but he knew it from a more of an educational standpoint. But mm-hmm. He would call himself more agnostic. Okay. My mother was raised Christian Scientist, so that was a combo. But my parents always brought us up that if I had a friend that was, you know, Southern Baptist, if I had a friend that was LDS, no matter what, if I asked, hey, can I go with them to their church? My parents said, sure, find out all you can about whatever you want, because you'll find that the common denominator mm-hmm. is that be good to each other, and you'll find more the same than you'll find different. So I feel very fortunate that happened. You know, so that was kind of a great experience growing up, because my parents weren't anti any religion, because they thought that religion was more to help people rather than to hurt and divide people. So
So have you had so like since you've like written things like, you know, on your personal time, have you ever like got any of that stuff published before?
The things that I've had published were in the newspaper.
Oh, that was
and they were, yeah, there were articles. I had one in Northern California, and it was about the bridge that was near Concord. I can't remember what the name of the bridge is there, but someone had posted something. I wrote an article. They published it. I was very surprised. Mm-hmm. I had a couple things published here in the newspaper in Arizona. Mm-hmm. One of them had to do with when my dad passed. They asked me to talk about some things about that. And I did a website and wrote up kind of a tribute for my dad. And I got emails about that for a while. But that's probably the only ones that I can think of, that were published where somebody else other than my parents would read it. You know?
So. There was, in high school, we had to write a poem for like my English class. And, I wrote a poem. It was just like as part of a homework assignment. And I did it the day of, like that morning, because I totally forgot to do it. And so I was just trying to think of something to write about. And I forget like if there was a subject that we had to write about, like if we were writing about like what we were learning at the time. But I wrote it out, and my brother read it, and he submitted it to like this this company that would like publish like poems in a book. And then like, if you were like one of the top 10 that they liked, you would get the book for free. But if you didn't, you could always just, you know, pay to get the book. So he submitted it. I got a letter saying that, you know, thanks for the submission. It's going to be published, in the book. But you weren't one of the winners. So you could, you know, for paying like, you know, $35 or whatever it is, you know, you could own a copy of the book. I was in high school, so I didn't have a job. I didn't have money. So I never bought it. And I never told my parents that you know, I got it published. So I think if I did, they probably would have bought the book. But that's one regret that I wish I bought the book, because I don't even remember what the name of the book is called. So it's not like I could go look it up. And I don't even remember what the title of my poem was called. But it was just kind of, I know, yeah, it was just kind of funny. But it's something that I always think about once in a while, especially when it comes to like writing assignments and stuff for school. I always just think about it. It just kind of pops up into my head.
You know, in the early days.
That'd be a good mystery, though. That'd be a good mystery, because you could write a story about, like, in my head when you're saying mm-hmm. that, you could write a story about, you know, finding your long lost poem or something, and, you know, what happens along the way. That'd be pretty awesome. I'd be interested in reading it, and be fun to find that book.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of remember a little bit about what it was about, like the poem, but yeah, but I don't remember like the verses and all that stuff. It was short. It wasn't like that long and stuff like that.
Poems are cathartic. I know that like some people, they can write poems, you know, like right off the top of their head. I met a girl through this whole book experience that she's 22 and her stories about her poetry and stuff are amazing. I've written poems before, but they had to be like, for me, it wasn't something I'm going to sit down and write a poem. It was like something was happening in my head and I wrote it and it came out that way. But I think that poems are hard to write. So you wrote a poem. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, and it's published somewhere. So what were you saying, Josh?
I was going to say in the early days of the internet, I had movie reviews published.
I remember that. I remember that you had those movie reviews published
in newspaper, and then my mom's sister submitted it for it's called Ahwatukee Life or something like that.
Something like that, yeah. It was a Ahwatukee publication.
It was a city in Arizona near where they live, and they had an online website, and they published my movie reviews there too.
I guess like I was on the journalism class in college, so you know we got. I had to write stuff for the newspaper, but I wouldn't consider that published because that's just like.
No, it is, because here's the thing is if you get your word out there, it's published. Like I wrote for Cal Poly Pomona when I went there, and I wrote about, it's kind of funny because some of the things they had me write about were things that I normally wouldn't have even thought about, you know, because mm-hmm. you got to sign things.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting. But it's just, sometimes you want to write things, and I used to do it a lot more spontaneously, like to newspapers and things. But I have to say that I don't read a newspaper as much anymore when it's online, yeah. because it's all just a jumble of all different news. I really used to enjoy opening up a newspaper and reading it, because there was columnists that you look forward to, both from the time when I was a kid, even here in Arizona. There's this one person in Arizona that I really love her columns, and she's been really great. And now I come to find out that she's also acquainted with Tara. So there you go.
It's oh, wow. So let's talk about Love Meets Life, stories of love showing up in unexpected ways. So what can you tell our listeners, like what's this book about?
Well, none of the authors were given an assignment like, you know, you have to talk about this. It was just to talk about love. So it was very interesting because there were people that suffered, you know, abuse and how they overcame it through love. People that suffered great loss for, you know, family member. There were people in the book that their whole goal was to change perception. Mm-hmm. of themselves and others. There's a minister in the book. There is a judge in the book. There is a politician in the book. There's a contractor in the book. So there's a lot of different people, different perspectives. And what's interesting is once it all came together, you mm-hmm. saw that everyone saw love in different ways, because a lot of people, when they hear the title, they assume it's all about, you know, oh, I met this guy or this girl, and they're just awesome, and I fell in love. Well, that could be it, but it doesn't have to be it, because love shows up in kind of unexpected ways. But the main thing that they do is that when love shows up, it means something to at different points in your life and to different people. So there's a lady in the book that started this kindness movement. And in the town, Salisbury, where she lives, she's actually just became Citizen of the Year there. And now they've, it's known as the Kindness City. They have events around it.
Oh.
It's moving across the U.S. So it's things like that that you wouldn't think of, but that's love, you know, because everybody needs something that is positive. And that positivity, sometimes people call positivity love. Sometimes love is positivity, you know, so it goes back and forth, and it's the little things in it. So, but the book is really, it has probably one of the most diverse group of people that I've seen in books that I've read. And you may have a story that you relate to, you may have a story that you don't, you know, maybe personally, mm-hmm. but to read their story, it'll move you. It's just because of the fact that everyone wrote from their own personal experience and what it meant to them. So that's always, to me, that's always better than if it's an assignment and, you know, tell us about what fall leaves mean to you. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think this one was more personal and people give a lot more of themselves.
And it's not like every story is The Notebook, right?
Right. Yeah. Not every story is The Notebook. And it's kind of interesting. A couple of the people in the book, like there's this one lady that she makes these bracelets mm-hmm. and she takes them to, she has even some seniors help out and stuff, but they give out the bracelets just randomly to people and they're kindness bracelets. Mm. And so then there's another person that, you know, part of her therapy was, you know, going out there and now she's a public speaker. There was a woman in there that reading her story, you'll find out, but she had to give up a child and it ended up, that was the only child she could ever have.
Oh no.
And so then she became an advocate for adoption rights and things. And she changed a lot of things based on what, instead of saying, oh, you know, I'm miserable because it's happened. She could still be sad, but instead of just sitting there and you know, dealing with that grief that she had, she went out and made a difference. And that's what amazes me about this people. There's a lady in Dublin, Ireland, that she's connected with people all around the world. And it's because of kindness and, you know, good things. So you can see that you connect with so many people because people are desperate, especially right now, the climate right now, people are desperate to have nice things, good things, you know, kind things. They're to get back to a personal connection, you know, where you can actually see the good in everyone. Not all the people may agree with each other about their points of view, but they all respect each other because they learned more about how and why and what makes them tick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Right, Josh?
Yeah.
And then, so your part of the book is called Discovering Self-Love. So what made you inspired to write it and like, and make you want to share that particular story?
Well, you know, when they had the offer out there to submit something, I really didn't have anything planned, you know, but mm-hmm. what came to me was what we touched on based on a little bit earlier was that, you know, talking with Josh and, you know, my husband, Gary, about getting so stressed out about what was going on in the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to do something positive. So I was at the point where, you know, the kids don't need me, the grandkids don't need me that much, which is a good thing. That's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because everybody's off doing their life. And so you kind of lost part of who you are.
Yes.
And it was kind of stressful. And another thing, you know, like I said, I'm getting older. You know, it just thinking, I finally realized why a lot of times when you meet older people that they say, oh, I wish I would have done this, or, you know, just things like that, you know, regrets that they had. Well, for me, I kept waiting to win the lottery to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started getting involved and getting educated about the underserved population, people that are homeless, people that have mental health issues, people that are, you know, lacking in the resources for just basic daily life. Mm-hmm. And so I found that, hey, if I can get some people to help me gather together food items or clothing items or, you know, hygiene items and get them out to them, that was something that I could do with a group of people. I didn't have to take the financial responsibility totally on myself. And I didn't have to feel bad if I couldn't contribute $500. I contributed a lot of time and I contributed a lot of effort. And I don't mean effort in the negative, that effort sometimes is a connotation of, I meant like a purpose, I guess.
Yeah.
And so it made me start feeling really good about that. And that my story kind of tells about how that happened a few years ago. And it just popped up that I, you know, you always think I can't do this because I'm not good enough, or I'm not rich enough, or I'm not young enough, all these different things. And you think about what you're not instead of what you have.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, even if you have what you think is not the right thing, there's a right thing for somebody. You can help somebody, and it could be a smile. You know, when you get to know about people on the streets, the homeless people, they're there for a variety of reasons. Typically, people think that it's all drug related. There can be people on the streets that are there either because of drugs or being on the streets drove them to drugs. Mm-hmm. But there's mental health is one of the biggest things, and financial. There are more people that people don't realize. You could be working next to someone in office and they're living in their car because they can't afford rent. There's people that, you know, the reason that they're able to eat is because they work at a job that maybe provides them with meals. There's so many different things out there. And right now, the way the economy is for most people is that you're usually only a couple paychecks away from being on the street yourself or being in that circumstance where you're going to try to figure out what to do. Seniors on fixed incomes, let alone anybody else on a fixed income, but seniors, a lot of times, you know, Social Security is what they have coming in, and people think it's a lot of money. It's not. And if your rent goes up by like $50, that could be the difference between either taking medication, mm-hmm. eating, or being able to pay your rent. It's not right. And so what you have to do is you have to get out there and, you know, help kind of give them something along the way to grab onto, but also work towards a goal to resolve the issue, which no one person or organization is going to do it. It's got to be everybody together. And so if we all thought, well, I can't do it, well, of course, nobody's going to get it done. But if every person said, I can do this, that could be that one person, those five people, those 10 people could be the difference in something good happening for either one person or a whole group of people.
Yeah, and I wonder how many people out there think that they need to have money to start making a difference, and not realize that they could start off small and then work their way up. So, like, volunteering, like, if somebody who's listening, like, right now and is, like, starting to become inspired on, like, you know, wanting to help people more, what did you do to, like, just get the ball rolling?
Well, I looked up organizations, and I was involved with one for a long period of time, but now I'm involved with multiple organizations. And so the main thing is that it has to be something that you either have to want to educate yourself about it, or you have a passion for it already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then find something that realize that you make a commitment to it, but it doesn't have to be. That's the other thing that I had, because my hours at my job were always all over the board, you know, so it was hard to commit to. I'm going to be there Tuesday at 4:00. So find something that fits in your schedule. Most organizations that are looking for volunteers, they have something for you no matter what you can give, whether you help check people in when they're coming in for meals, whether you help serving meals. It could be working with a domestic violence situation in shelters. There's a lot of foster kid programs. So there are so many different things. So if you have something that either touched you or someone you know, or maybe it's just something that you are curious about, you can make a difference. Sometimes it's just handwriting letters. That's one of the things that right now a lot of them are doing. All the seniors are, you know, pretty much shut in the senior care facilities. So you write a letter, and it doesn't have to be addressed to anyone in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But you write a letter and say, hey, you know, I just thought, how are you doing today? And it brightens their day. There's some people that just drop off flowers they get from the grocery store and drop off a couple of them someplace and say, hey, if you have anyone there that needs something. There's other people that round up donations for diapers for people who, you know, have small children and they can't afford the diapers. You can help at food banks. There's food banks here. You can help pack food boxes for them to distribute. So there's a lot of different things to do. And if you can't do something physical, there's something you can do that is, you know, helping raise money. You can talk to people. You can just go collect. If you have people that travel, collect all the shampoo bottles and stuff. That's what I did from the hotels.
Mm-hmm.
And then you donate those to organizations and they distribute it to those people that think about it. If you're on the street, you don't always have, especially now with COVID, there's not always a place to even wash.
Yeah. And I wonder how many people actually have those small like soaps and from the hotels and shampoo bottles just lying around somewhere in their bathroom or underneath the sink or something like that.
Yeah, we did. And then I put out the word at my office, and then people started bringing them to me, and then I was able to distribute them and donate them to organizations. There's an organization I work with right now remotely, because of the fact I haven't been able to go out with COVID to where they're at, because the hours that they do it are within my work hours and it's on the other side of town. I wouldn't get there in time before they stop for the day. Mm-hmm. But there's an organization called Cloud Covered Streets. And what they did was they put together this trailer truck, and it has showers in there, including some for accessible. It's got wash, like laundry facilities. It has, now they have people coming up that are volunteering to give haircuts and things to the people, little things like that. And those people now look forward to it coming. They can come there. They know they can take a shower. We're in Arizona. It's been like 100, 110, 115 degrees. These people are sleeping on the streets, and they're, you know, sometimes they have to hide behind a building to sleep at night because it's dangerous out there too, because they get harassed. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have anything. I know that my husband was helping make these mats for the homeless to sleep on that at least give them some protection from the ground or the cement, wherever they were at. But if you think about it, sunscreen, you know, they're outside all the time. They have no relief from the heat. So I'm collecting things with the cool weather coming, like hats and gloves and, you know, warm weather clothes, like sweatshirts and, cool weather clothes, sorry, sweatshirts and socks and things. Mm-hmm. It's just the little things that we all take for granted. Power bars, you know, just having like the snack bars or those cracker packs that have peanut butter and crackers, flavors for your water bottles and stuff. So there's just so many things out there right now, and it's just that there's a need, and it's getting worse. It's really getting worse, and people are getting rousted from different areas. What I'm really worried about now is, especially in, you guys are in California, is all the fires and stuff. After the fire in Paradise, California, a lot of people became homeless up there because they were seniors. Mm-hmm. And they had help for a while, but some of them never got their whole life back. So if you think about all the areas in California that have burnt, there's going to be more people that are going to need homes and help. And, you know, you have federal funds and state funds to a certain way, but some people are under the radar in that. So what are they going to do? You know, I think about that all the time. And families, like their businesses, small mom and pop businesses, and maybe, you know, a single mom was a waitress in one of those places that's now closed down. So yes, she might get some aid, but she needs a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a snowball thing. So that's what I'm saying. You can help people in all different ways. And the biggest realization for me was I didn't have to be rich to do it. It'd be nice to be rich to do it, but I didn't have to be rich. And I didn't have to give, like, you know, 7 days a week to it every day, all day long. If you commit to it and you do as much as you can, you have a good feeling and you've helped somebody, whether it's one person or, you know, thousands of people, you've helped someone. And that's a good thing to know about yourself.
And what about your husband? Like, does he, like, if you have something you want to do, like, oh, I want to volunteer for this, is he like supportive?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's so totally supportive.
Cause it's like, I wonder if it's hard for people like who want to do something and then they need like motivation from somebody. And they try to, like, you know, get their parents or their spouse or their partner or their children involved, but they don't seem like they want to do it. So I wonder if people just kind of put it off to the side because, like, oh, I'll do it later because nobody else wants to do it. Or maybe I'll find somebody who's also interested that it'll give me that motivation to actually go out and do what I feel like I want to do. I want to help people.
Yeah. That's hard because sometimes we all need a kick to get started. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's the hardest thing, and no matter what, whether it's, you know, cooking dinner for the night, schoolwork, you know, getting up to go to work in the morning, you know, everybody needs some type of something to get them going. So what I found too is that a lot of times like some of the activities that you could share as a family. And just because someone doesn't want to do it doesn't mean that it's, you shouldn't do it. They may not want to do it or understand until you start doing it. I know Gary got involved. We were both, he actually crocheted these mats for the homeless out of shopping bags. And he also did a lot of the stuff they needed for like marketing materials. So there's always something someone could do. If I tried to crochet something, I'd still be working on my first rug. Okay. I just can't do it. But at the same point, I got involved with another ways. I collected the bags for them to do that with. And then, you know, he showed people how to crochet on it. And there was other people too. It wasn't just him. But now what we do is we try to support a couple of the different groups, whether it's monetary donations. Sometimes we just order stuff from like Amazon on their list if they have. We have one person that we work with that does things individually. She actually every single day of the year goes out in different areas near where she lives. And she knows the homeless people by name and they know her. And she can make sure they have the things that they need, whether it's a cup of soups or, you know, Band-Aids. She's out there every single day by herself. So we usually meet her, maybe once a month, and I collect things and then we take it out to her for her to use, because she's been able to partner with another nonprofit that they give her some things too. But this way, this is her supply and she's able to get it out and she has it if someone needs it. And, so we try to help in different ways. There's another group that does like the kindness activities that we're talking about. And they just do things. Someone has a need. Like there was this one lady that was a single mom and she was taking care of her parents. And then I don't know the full story of how these two 19-year-old homeless brothers got to her. But she took them in and helped them get on their feet and stuff too. So like we collected things and donated stuff to give to them. But that wasn't through us doing it. It was because someone else told us about it and we were able to participate. And there was other people that participated even more, but we did what we could with it, you know, so it gave them some food boxes and, you know, teenage boys and especially they go through a lot of food. So, you know, we gave them some treats and stuff. But you try to do what you can, you know, and now right now we just went through and we have a whole box we collected of linens and towels and things like that that might have seen better days, but we're donating them to this organization through my granddaughter, who is for people who do pet rescue. So they use them with the pets and stuff. So see, we're not, pets aren't our forte, let's say, but so if we hear about a need, we just try to do it. It doesn't have to be something that is only one cause, because I think that through one, you find another, you find another, you find another, and then you'll find how much stuff you have time-wise, or maybe, you know, you can help them marketing, you can help get the word out, you can donate. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. Sometimes I just repost things on Facebook from organizations that give all the time. And I repost that so other people know, hey, if you're going to spend money on something, go to this place because they give back.
Yeah. That's always good. So like your story is about, you know, how you were doing things with your life. And then there was one line that stuck out to me in your story. And it was, I had to start with loving myself and accept the imperfections. I think that rings true for like people that they need to like love themselves, you know?
You know, because you can, like I had to learn and I'm still learning. It's like a learning process to not give myself negative talk. Mm-hmm. You know, I know there's probably a better term for it than that, but you know, again, I can't because I'm this, I can't because I'm that, or I can't because I don't know how to do this. You know, and you go through a thing where you feel like you're not succeeding. Well, what are you measuring success about? You know, you know, what is it that's success? If you wake up every day and, you know, I still have days where I go, oh, dang, you know, this today's not my best day, but I've tried really, really hard, really, really hard to say what's good about today or what's good about that happens, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just one thing. It's just a spin. And I found that mindfulness is something I've really been exploring a lot too, about like being mindful of how your reactions interact with others, and try to make sure that I don't bleed any negativity I feel onto someone else. And I have friends that, like, right now everyone talks about politics, and you know, we all have strong feelings or we're ambivalent. It just, I think there's no in between anymore. But I have friends who are like so total opposite me in the way that they believe, but I respect that. That's the way they believe. So I get along fine with them, but I do also cut off people. And it's been known to be even people that I'm, you know, close to, because I've spoke up at work before too about when people say things that are like either sexist, ageist, racist. You know, I don't put up with it, because silence means that you are okay with it. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn to watch and moderate how I say it and react, but I will not let anyone talk about somebody that they are, to make them seem like better, yeah, or that there's something less than. That really ticks me off, and I don't like it at all, and it bothers me, because maybe I want to have this like kind of Pollyanna world, but I'd rather be trying for that than to say that all these people are wrong, all these people are right, and all these people matter, all these people don't. I don't put up with any kind of religious intolerance, whether it's about the religion or the religion being intolerant about people. That doesn't happen with me. I don't like hate speech. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I think, going back to what you're asking, and if I'm rambling, but going back to what you're asking about, you know, myself, I tried to stop using the word just.
Yeah.
Because to me, and I tell people when I talk to you on the phone, business-wise too, when they'll say, oh, I'm just this. I said, just a four-letter word. Don't be using that. Because it's true, because just is a negative. So I'm just a housewife. I'm just, you know, this. I'm just that. Just is a four-letter word. You know, people need to realize that everyone is contributing something. It's just different. That's all.
Yeah, I saw a video like where like someone was recording something. I think she was a waitress. Like, oh, I'm just a waitress. And the guy's like, you're not just a waitress. You're not just, you're somebody. You're not just somebody.
Right.
You know, so like what she's doing actually matters. And it's not like her job isn't meaningless. So it made her feel better, because it made her feel like she's an actual person. And not just,
well, and I think that, like, because I have part of a thing written too about just, but the one thing that I remember is that probably with my generation, I know that all of our parents and grandparents had gone through a lot of things, and they wanted their kids to be doctors and lawyers, and you know, the success, you know, what they could do with success. But all those people couldn't be successful without all the support people that made life go on. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened is that in the search, everyone had to be, you know, the highest paid, the best this, the best that. They lost focus on that. That's where you think that you have something to give. Because if it wasn't for, you know, the plumber coming to fix your plumbing, or the, you know, the taxi or bus driver, or train driver, you know, getting you someplace, there's so many different things in it. And the people that fix your car, the, you know, the nurses in the doctor's office, you know, a lot of times you think about the doctor, but what about the receptionist, the people that make the appointments? If you just look at it, everybody has a place in life. Mm-hmm. They're not always in the place they might want to be, but that becomes a personal choice to either say, hey, this is great, I really enjoyed it, I'm good at it, or try to find a way to get to what you want to be without making yourself go crazy thinking that you're not there yet.
Yes. Well, This was a lot. So if somebody out there wants to know more about who Patricia Holgate Haney is, where can they find more information?
They can go to Patricia Holgate Haney and email me there, patriciaholgatehaney@gmail.com, or the website is phtravels.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good. And then when is the, does the book come out in print, or is it just online?
Oh, it's in print. In fact, I actually just got my advanced copies of it. And the book, the official book launch is October 13th. We're going to have some really great fun activities on our launch website, which is on Facebook, and it's called Where Love Meets Life. And anyone can go on there and join. There's going to be different contests and, like I said, activities. If someone wants an signed book, they can go to the different authors. Mine, they can get it from me at phtravels.com. There's also available at Amazon. And guess what? It's Amazon Prime this week, right? So everybody's going to be out there shopping. Pop a couple books in your cart, and then you can have them and give them as gifts. But in addition to that, Amazon has something called Smile. And Smile is where you can dedicate a percentage of whatever you spend for gifts and things. And Amazon takes a percentage of it and gives it to a nonprofit of your choice. So it's like a win-win-win. You got Prime, you got my book, and you got you get to give to charity. But you can go to Barnes & Noble also has it. And my understanding is there's some more bookstores that have been picking it up. So, but you can get a electronic copy for Kindle off of Amazon, but the books are there. They'll be there starting, I believe you can start ordering them now, but the official launch is on the 13th, and I have already sold quite a few copies of mine, so I'm getting ready to start mailing them out, and I hope to sell a lot more. But it's going to be a great book, and really there's something in it for everyone. And I say that because I found out how much that I really enjoyed reading the other chapters in the book. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some people in there that are real difference makers and change makers in the world that I'm like just really honored to be in the same publication with them.
I want like, so no audio book.
You know, I apologize, but audio, I don't know if does Kindle have the audio on it too? They may. I haven't seen the audio book, and because the author who compiled it, she hasn't said anything, and typically it would be them reading it. So
yeah,
I believe
that'd
right
be awesome.
Now I believe right now it's electronic and paperback, but I'll bring that up to the publisher because the publisher is very involved in the book. And on much more of a level than I thought they would be. She's an amazing person, and she's given a lot of encouragement and you know, direction along the way to everyone. As far as like, you know, for the book and the launch, I do know that there's the people back on the East Coast that there's some people that have sold like so many copies already. They've already gone through like there's a waiting list to get more books for them.
Oh my gosh.
So.
Well, thank you for your time, Patricia. I hope everybody out there that's listening picks up a copy of Love Meets Life, Stories of Love Showing Up in Unexpected Ways. And yeah.
And I hopefully that the podcast today has inspired you to, you know, love yourself. And, you know, it inspired me to maybe write a book. So I'm going to see if I'm going to write a book.
Or too. Just get out there and be involved with the community. And, you know, maybe it'll help you with what's going on, like in your life. It could benefit you.
Yep.
Stuff. Yeah. So thank you again, Patricia. So I am Daniel.
And I'm Josh.
And you're listening to Room 396. Thank you. Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you.